sack. Is that all you get for your money? And if that's what you have in mind, yeah, if that's what you're all about, good luck moving up, 'cause I'm moving out.
Good morning and welcome to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. This is Becky Ivins, and I am here with my attorney, Ron Shalott. And we are going to be talking about contracts and how you take title into your property and the kind of the ramifications of that, because it kind of matters how you take title. So good morning, Ron.
Good morning, Becky. Good to see you again this morning.
Well, it's good to see you. Mark is moving. So he took a day off.
So when you're talking about real estate on the move, you guys are really moving.
Loader truck. We've got a lot to talk about.
We always have a lot to talk
about. I know.
About.
Our market is changing a lot. This whole year, actually, in the late last year, we had multiple offers, and we still do have multiple offers often, but we don't so much have the 20 or 40 offers that we were getting at one point. There's more homes on the market, and so people do things to get competitive with their offer. So we're going to talk about some of the things that you can do to get competitive with your offer and sometimes how those can backfire on you.
Well, you say more homes in the market. What price points are you seeing more in the market, and which price points are really moving?
Well, the ones that move the most are the ones that are about 125 up to about 300, because that's what most people can afford to live in. Now, that has inched up because 300 used to be much harder to get for the average person, but with interest rates at 3%, you can buy a lot of house.
What's the square footage roughly if you're looking at a house 300, and I realize it's based upon exactly where it's at.
Well, it's based upon location,
yeah,
and age,
okay,
of the house, because you can get homes are selling for usually between about $100 and $150 a foot.
Okay, so your hundreds would be in the areas that are little less well-developed?
Well, the hundreds would be in the older homes,
right,
that have the 8-foot ceilings, the $100 square foot.
Well, we've got close to downtown, just north of downtown, we have those areas that are just beautiful, big homes.
Well, that's a totally different story. Those are historic.
Okay.
And those vary so greatly because some have been restored and some have not. Some have been what we call dolled up to look great, but the basement walls may be caving in. So those that have had the infrastructure done, the electric replaced, because those were built with knob and tube electrical.
You said basement?
There are basements in almost
what's
homes.
What's a basement?
I know, downtown, right? Yeah. Not that they're usable basements, but they were built with basements.
Basically, and swimming pools sometimes.
Yeah, and then that's where a lot of times the furnace was located.
Right, yeah.
And often still is, right?
I grew up in that kind of a community, so I'm well acquainted with basements. So when I came to Oklahoma, it was odd to me not to have basements.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and there's a reason why we don't have basements.
I've understood that. My beloved wife has told me why that is the case, and we actually looked at a few homes eons ago, about 30 years ago, I guess now, and we saw some of the reasons why basements weren't the best idea in this area.
Now, why does your wife say we don't have basements?
Because of the high water table.
Yeah. Well, and then just the affordability of a basement. Our soils are not real good for basements. We've either got sandy loam or we've got clay, basically. East side sandy, west side, I mean, not that it's exactly, but is clay. But the affordability of building a basement in Oklahoma, our freeze line is pretty high because we have a more temperate weather than you do up north. So up north, they have to dig down so far to put like water lines.
Yes.
And such that
yes.
once you dig down that low, you might as well put a basement in, right?
That's true. But yeah. I'm also seeing here, and I don't know if this is a reason as well, when developers come in, they a lot of times will grade and fill, and it's not the best of dirt that you're seeing, trying to make the thing flat. Because Oklahoma City has a lot of ups and downs in it that I wasn't aware of until I started to bike more and find out there's a lot of hills in Oklahoma City. Maybe not what you would call a hill, but sure a hill when you're trying to...
When you're on a bicycle it's a lot. All of a sudden, you're in the Appalachians, right?
Yeah, it feels like I'm on the Tour de France. And,
you know. Yeah, there you go. Well, I just logged into the Multilist so I could kind of get some stats for you because that makes a difference, too. Like the average number of days on the market, depending on price range.
I would imagine, yes.
The average number of days on the market is like 5. Or 6.
5.
I mean, for certain, for the lower. For, yeah. say, anything under about, 75,000 or so, it doesn't stay on the market at all. But you get up to the, over about the 225 mark, and the days on the market is higher. The higher you go in price, usually it takes a little bit longer to find the buyer willing to pay the price.
Well, I've been getting several envelopes with a nice pretty picture of my house through the window envelope on the left side and saying, we want to buy your house.
Oh, my gosh.
And I have no interest in selling my house or ever moving.
I get those, too. And I have rental property and commercial property. And those, and not gads of all that, I mean, yeah. but a few. And I get calls probably about 2 or 3 a day from people saying they want to buy my house. And then you get cards in the mail, of course,
sure.
and the envelopes. And I don't sort through our mail, so I never see those. I did at first because Jim would go, well, these people want to buy that house that we own. What do you think about selling that? Well, Jim, we're not selling that.
Well, yeah. to be fair, it's in all disciplines because I get postcards and that from estate planning lawyers offering to do my estate planning.
Yes.
And I have to, and I know some of them.
And you're on the estate planning committee for the Bar Association.
I know all of them. and I just start laughing at it because I was like, really? You want me to come to a meeting? I want the one with the free dinner.
Yeah, there you go. And they have nice dinners, too.
They've kind of stopped that right now.
Because of COVID.
COVID, yeah. Too bad. It's a lot of Zoom stuff, which I'm not interested in any more Zoom meetings.
Yeah, right.
Or I should say the video meetings. I shouldn't use a brand name.
Well, yeah. If Zoom is kind of like Kleenex nowadays, right?
It's
or Jacuzzi.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Things have gotten like that. But,
yeah.
We're talking, I know before... I know we just have about a minute or two, about things that I'm seeing right now recently. And a lot of it is with people coming in with trusts. And is there a real property, other house or other real property they own in the trust? And it's stunning to me that either they don't know or it's not in there. Or they're not sure if it's in there or not, that they've bought and sold and that kind of thing. So that's something that your listeners really need to be keen on. If you have a trust or have an estate plan, make sure that your trust is doing what you want it to do. And the lawyer should sit down with you at the beginning and say, what's your plan? What are your goals? And then write those down for you, or you write them down, give them to the lawyer, and make sure that they have met those objectives. Because if you've got a real property and you haven't put it in your trust, and it's still in your name, you pass away, and even if you have a pour-over will that puts it in the trust after you die, then you've got to pay for a probate that you shouldn't have had to do.
Right. Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. News Radio 1000 KTOK. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. This is Becky Ivins. I'm leader of the Becky Ivins Real Estate Team, where we are doing some great business. If you want your house sold, call. We can do it. And I really pride myself in getting more money than the typical realtor is going to get you. I do statistics, and it turns out I get about 1.9% more than the typical realtor. So there you go. I like that. I like my numbers. And we're here with Ron Shalott. And Ron Shalott's my attorney, and I kind of depend on him for my corporate attorney, too. And Ron, we were talking about taking title in a property, like if it's in a trust.
Right.
It turns out that that matters to sellers. If they sell to someone that's taking title in a trust or an LLC, and people hold things in these different entities now, homeowners want to sell to an individual or a family on the most part. It doesn't give them a warm, fuzzy feeling to sell to an entity.
Well, sometimes the entities are investment entities, but sometimes the entities are just vehicles that people are using to hold property for either a tax reason or a later passing on reason for an estate matter. Your LLC can be named any name that the state of Oklahoma doesn't have already registered, so you can come up with, you know, any name you want. Then your trusts can be any name as well. You can create a trust name that doesn't even have your own name in it, or it can have your name in the trust, which many of them do. They'll say like the Ronald Shalott Revocable Trust or some language like that. Yet you won't really know who is backing that, who is actually owning that. You might know who the trustee is, or you might know who the manager of the LLC is, but you don't really know who's getting it. And quite frankly, it should be of no concern in the sense of you want to sell it to an individual. Okay, you sell it to me, but if I'm just a straw buyer or if I plan on flipping it, you wouldn't know that anyway. So today you really don't know. So you're best to look at, are you getting a fair price for the sale, and Do they have cash?
Right. And are the other terms agreeable to you? Because there's other terms in a contract other than just price.
Oh, yes, there are.
I had a realtor this week counter offer an offer we sent, and by text, hey, I've talked to the seller. The seller's not willing to take that price. He'll take this price. And so, of course, I have to text back and say, how about the other terms in the contract? Is the price the only counter offer, and could I please get that in writing? Because if I get it in writing, I can go and say, hey, to the buyers, Mr. and Miss Buyer, they've agreed to every one of your terms in this contract.
And if you look at those contracts, those are four or five pages?
Six
pages, okay. Several paragraphs.
Well, and then they've got attachments to them.
There's
like an HOA attachment, sure. Financing attachment.
A lot of things in there about what goes with the property, what's excluded.
Mm-hmm.
You sometimes have specific exclusion.
How much time's allotted for inspections? How long do you have to take it off the market?
Some realtors, I don't think, always put the exclusions in there. But anyway, you've got to be careful, because what you're putting in that contract as an offer, is that's what you're married to, so to speak, and that's what you're committing to if the person says yes.
Right.
But if they come back with a counter, then the counter may be for one term, such as price, or maybe for a number of things. May not even be for price, but it may be for time for inspection, time for closing, repairs, things like that. It could be something where they want all these things done, and you are saying, no, you're going to get it as is, where is.
Yeah. Boy, there's a subject for us, as is, where is.
I walked into that one, didn't I?
Could we talk about that for a minute? Because on multiple offers, when you have, let's just say you've got eight offers sitting in front of you and you present these to the seller. When we have eight, we do a spreadsheet. And it basically is the blanks in the contract, are each have a category, and then we kind of compare. Start with the bottom line and go, okay, which one nets you the most money?
Sure.
And then we back up, and I kind of color code mine like, you know, yellow or kind of orangey for caution. This is a caution we need to look at. This is a stopper, like $500 earnest money. Realtors, yeah. If you're out there, none of us take you seriously when you put $500 for earnest money. It's like, would you take your house off the market for 3 weeks while we think about doing inspections and decide if we want to opt out? And then we get our earnest money back, our little measly $500.
Or if they forfeit the earnest money.
And they don't.
$500 is.
But they don't during our inspection period. Yeah. The buyer can back out if, in the sole opinion of the buyer, results of investigations, inspections, and reviews are unsatisfactory.
But even if they breach it and they give up the earnest money, you know,
it's only $500.
Yeah, it's only $500. It's not.
Do you know, one year I had three investors back out of a contract the day of closing. They sent somebody else to look at the contract, and then they fly in the day of closing and look at the house. And then three times in 1 year, the investor just walked away and lost the $500.
I wish those investors would have my phone number and pay me to go and do all this stuff.
Yeah, I know, right? Yes.
That'd be a great
yes.
Great,
but the as is where is, that yeah. is put into a contract. As is where is with seller making no repairs is put into a contract to make it look more attractive. However, if you don't mark out paragraph 7 saying that the buyer gets to inspect and can get their earnest money back and cancel the contract, as is where is means nothing.
You would have an inconsistent term. Now, you can get into a debate as to whether a handwritten term in a contract supersedes the printed term. That's something that you have to be careful on, because if you handwrite something or you specifically type something in, that is something with thought and negotiation, where if it's already pre-printed, it's in the small 3-point type in the middle of a 10-page contract, you know, is that really something that they care about? So it could override it, but do you want to take that chance? Because as is where is just means what it says. You're not going to do any repairs. This is where it's at. This is the condition it's in with the time of the contract. That's what you're going to get.
Well, but they can back out during the inspection period, and there you have accepted their offer because they're willing to take it. With now, in one instance, we had no inspections. Buyer accepts property with no inspections, as is where is with seller making no repairs. That was pretty attractive, and it was cash and well above list price, so...
Let's talk about awesome. What happens if they don't want to do that or we get into a problem.
Okay, we'll discuss that right after this break with more on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. News Radio 1000, KTOK. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. This is Becky Ivins, leader of the Becky Ivins Real Estate Team, and I am with Ron Shalott, my attorney at law. It's time for our word of the day, brought to you by Robbins Roofing, where their word every day is trust. You can trust Robbins Roofing to do a small repair or a whole commercial roof. They handle the insurance claim with expertise. You really don't have to get too involved with that. So call Robbins Roofing, 728-3700, or just go to BeckyIvins.com, click on Becky's Favorites page, and a link to their website is going to be right there. So our word of the day today.
The word of the day comes from the fact that I get this question a lot from people, and some people get this really wrong, quitclaim deed.
Oh, okay.
Remember that quitclaim deed?
Yes.
Some people will say, what's a quitclaim deed?
Right. A lot of people get that confused.
But actually it's quit, Q-U-I-T, quitclaim deed. So what does that mean? Because we were talking about as is, where is kind of a situation. But it's a deed that releases your interest or your claim in the property. The quit in quit claim deed comes to us from French, old French primarily, but the modern French, it's quitte, Q-U-I-T-T-E-E, which means discharged or freed. So we release or free up or discharge our ownership or our claim to the property. It's not only to just transfer title to the property, but if you have any kind of ownership interest in the property, you're giving up. For example, let's say a lady has a house that she's bought or she's inherited and she's lived in, and then she brings in a partner, and let's say they get married, but then a couple years later they get divorced. And the partner is never on the title, never did anything. It was always hers, always the original owner's. But that partner may have a claim to that title. So you would have them quit claim deed their claim or their ownership, whatever it is, to that property, to the original owner. It's just giving up what you own at that time if you own anything. I could quit claim deed to Becky Ivins, the Oklahoma State Capitol. That doesn't mean Becky Ivins owns the Oklahoma State Capitol. It just means that anything that Ron Chalot owned of the Oklahoma State Capitol, which, by the way, is nothing, would go to Becky Ivins. And that's all it really does. It transfers what you own at that time, not what you own later. And you're not guaranteeing or warrantying anything. That's a warranty deed where you guarantee or warranty title, you guarantee or warranty the legal description, you guarantee or warranty that you have an ownership interest. But in a quit claim deed, it's just whatever you own, this is in whatever is described, you're giving it to the other person.
Okay. Now, if you're quitting your interest, does that mean the husband and wife have to quit it to the wife? I mean, do both of them have to sign the quit claim deed?
Not in that particular situation, because if you're divorcing, you're then two different, or dissolving the marriage, I should say now. You are giving up your ownership interest in the property to the other spouse. So, our former spouse, as the case may be. So you would quit claim deed your interest to the other.
Okay.
And they would get all of your interest at that particular time.
Well, if you want to be a part of our conversation, please do give us a call at 840-1000, 405-840-1000. Just dial it, and Mr. Mike Gannon's going to put you in to ask us a question. You know, we're talking about as-is property. Almost every time I list a property, the seller tells me, well, I want to sell it as-is.
And really, that's a quit claim deed, isn't it? Because you're just giving whatever you had right then and there. You're transferring it away, whether you're selling it for cash or giving it. I say giving, but you can sell for cash in a quit claim deed. It's just the buyer has to beware. Remember the old days of caveat emptor?
Yes, right.
Which
let the buyer beware.
Let the buyer beware. That used to be the way real estate was in purchasing.
Before our disclosure laws.
Before our disclosure laws. Really back when I was first starting to practice, which shows you how long ago that was.
Yeah, right. Okay. Someone wants to be a part of our conversation, Ron. Good morning, Ann.
Good morning.
How are you doing today?
I'm well. Thank you.
Well,
I have a question for Ron about trust. When you're wanting to sell or buy a piece of property and you can't find the original trust, is that a big problem? You have a copy of it, but
is your copy a signed copy?
With a copied signature, right?
I think so.
Well, as long as you have a copy of the text of the trust, and if it shows that it was signed, then that could work, and usually we rely on that. And if it's your trust, you could always re-sign another copy as the original, or you could amend it. But usually what companies or that would look at would be a memorandum of trust. And a memorandum of trust is a document sometimes one page, sometimes I've seen them up to six pages, which summarize the trust as a memorandum. That's what a memorandum is a summary. And it says what the name of the trust is and who the trustee is, which is what's important, because it tells the world who is authorized to sign on behalf of the trust. And that memorandum is supposed to be filed in the county where the real property is located.
Well, and like if there's co-trustees, it tells you whether or not it takes one trustee can sign individually, has the power of the trust, whether either of them can sign individually or if it takes both.
And, or more than two. Even.
Or you more, can, that, right.
You can have multiple trustees.
And I ask for that memorandum of trust when a property is in the name of a trust. I have to see that before I can list a property because...
Your lawyer told you so.
My lawyer told me so, yes. And the thing is, I don't know who has the right to list that property if I don't see that memorandum of trust. Now, recently, exactly. We had someone who had a trust. This memorandum was like 9 pages long. Longest memorandum I've seen. And couldn't find it. Come to find out, it was filed along with the deed at the courthouse on subsequent pages of the same filing. Now, and typically they file those separately and they're easy to find if they've been filed. And I will tell you, my opinion is few of them get filed because they get stuck in an attorney's portfolio of your business or something. But anyway, you need to be sure that if you have a trust, that memorandum is filed of record. That way we know at the last minute we found that and were able to transfer title to that property.
So. Well, this is a kind of a weird deal. This was their father's trust, and it was left to the trustees with the two daughters. The one daughter who was in charge of it died, and now it's to the second daughter to take care of it. And so we don't know any of the particulars, you know, from the father who had the trust, who drew the trust up. So it's kind of convoluted in a way.
So you don't even know what's owned in the trust, do you?
Well, it's like I say, I've got a copy of the trust, but it's not, I don't think it's an original anymore. I can't tell copies from originals. It doesn't look like an original to me, but.
Well, and what you could do is you can look at the deed and see if the deed of the property deeded it into the trust. And from there, look for the memorandum of trust also filed in the same county. Hopefully it was filed before or after the deed, somewhere in there. It should be close in time. And if it's Oklahoma County, the Oklahoma County clerk does a wonderful job. Hooten does a wonderful job of tracking down the recorder of deeds. Look for the memorandum of trust. That'll tell you who the trustee is, and almost always, I don't want to say always, they should have who the successor trustees are or is. And the successor trustee would be the one after other people have passed away. The successor trustee steps in. And the successor trustee oftentimes is not the same name as the trust. So that's why the memorandum is important, is to find out who's got that authority, because you want to make sure. And then that person would have the authority. Then what happens within the trust to the results of the sale depends upon the terms of the trust itself. And that's where you would look at the trust documents and see, perhaps even contact the attorney who drafted it up and see, hey, was this the version that was signed? Have there been any amendments? Has it been changed? So you look at all those kind of things to investigate into it.
So it would be good to get back with the attorney that drew up that trust, probably.
I would to make sure that there hasn't been any changes to it, because sometimes we'll amend a trust, or sometimes we'll do a complete overhaul called a restatement, where you will completely change the trust, because it depends upon what the plan was originally and what the thought is now. I've done trusts that have been completely...
You want to know by now. You need get for your money. And if that's what you have in mind, yeah, if that's what you're all about, good luck moving up, 'cause I'm moving out.
Good morning and welcome to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. This is Becky Ivins, and I am here with my attorney, Ron Shalott. And we are going to be talking about contracts and how you take title into your property and the kind of the ramifications of that, because it kind of matters how you take title. So good morning, Ron.
Good morning, Becky. Good to see you again this morning.
Well, it's good to see you. Mark is moving. So he took a day off.
So when you're talking about real estate on the move, you guys are really moving.
Loader truck. We've got a lot to talk about.
We always have a lot to talk
about. I know.
About.
Our market is changing a lot. This whole year, actually, in the late last year, we had multiple offers, and we still do have multiple offers often, but we don't so much have the 20 or 40 offers that we were getting at one point. There's more homes on the market, and so people do things to get competitive with their offer. So we're going to talk about some of the things that you can do to get competitive with your offer and sometimes how those can backfire on you.
Well, you say more homes in the market. What price points are you seeing more in the market, and which price points are really moving?
Well, the ones that move the most are the ones that are about 125 up to about 300, because that's what most people can afford to live in. Now, that has inched up because 300 used to be much harder to get for the average person, but with interest rates at 3%, you can buy a lot of house.
What's the square footage roughly if you're looking at a house, 300? And I realize it's based upon exactly where it's at.
Well, it's based upon location,
yeah,
and age,
okay,
of the house, because you can get homes are selling for usually between about $100 and $150 a foot.
Okay, so your hundreds would be in the areas that are little less well-developed?
Well, the hundreds would be in the older homes,
right,
that have the 8-foot ceilings, the $100 square foot.
Well, we've got close to downtown, just north of downtown, we have those areas that are just beautiful, big homes.
Well, that's a totally different story. Those are historic.
Okay.
And those vary so greatly because some have been restored and some have not. Some have been what we call dolled up to look great, but the basement walls may be caving in. So those that have had the infrastructure done, the electric replaced, because those were built with knob and tube electrical.
You said basement?
There are basements in almost
what's
homes.
What's a basement?
I know, downtown, right? Not that they're usable basements, but they were built with basements.
Basically, and swimming pools sometimes.
Yeah, and then that's where a lot of times the furnace was located.
Right, yeah.
And often still is, right?
I grew up in that kind of a community, so I'm well acquainted with basements. So when I came to Oklahoma, it was odd to me not to have basements.
Yeah. Well, and there's a reason why we don't have basements.
I've understood that. My beloved wife has told me why that is the case, and we actually looked at a few homes eons ago, about 30 years ago, I guess now, and we saw some of the reasons why basements weren't the best idea in this area.
Now, why does your wife say we don't have basements?
Because of the high water table.
Yeah. Well, and then just the affordability of a basement. Our soils are not real good for basements. We've either got sandy loam or we've got clay, basically. East side sandy, west side, I mean, not that it's exactly, but is clay. But the affordability of building a basement in Oklahoma, our freeze line is pretty high because we have a more temperate weather than you do up north. So up north, they have to dig down so far to put like water lines.
Yes.
And such that
yes.
once you dig down that low, you might as well put a basement in, right?
That's true. But yeah. I'm also seeing here, and I don't know if this is a reason as well, when developers come in, they a lot of times will grade and fill, and it's not the best of dirt that you're seeing, trying to make the thing flat. Because Oklahoma City has a lot of ups and downs in it that I wasn't aware of until I started to bike more and find out there's a lot of hills in Oklahoma City. Maybe not what you would call a hill, but sure a hill when you're trying to...
When you're on a bicycle, it's a lot more... All of a sudden, you're in the Appalachians, right?
Yeah, it feels like I'm on the Tour de France. And,
you know. Yeah, there you go. Well, I just logged into the Multilist so I could kind of get some stats for you because that makes a difference, too. Like the average number of days on the market, depending on price range.
I would imagine,
know?
Yes.
The average number of days on the market is like 5 or 6.
5.
I mean, for certain, for the lower. For, yeah. say, anything under about, 75,000 or so. It doesn't stay on the market at all. But you get up to the over about the 225 mark, and the days on the market is higher. The higher you go in price, usually it takes a little bit longer to find the buyer willing to pay the price.
Well, I've been getting several envelopes with a nice pretty picture of my house through the window envelope on the left side and saying, "We want to buy your house."
Oh, my gosh.
And I have no interest in selling my house or ever moving.
I get those, too. And I have rental property and commercial property. And those, and not gads of all that, I mean, yeah. but a few. And I get calls probably about 2 or 3 a day from people saying, they want to buy my house. And then you get cards in the mail, of course,
sure.
and the envelopes. And I don't sort through our mail, so I never see those. I did at first because Jim would go, "Well, these people want to buy that house that we own. What do you think about selling that?" Well, Jim, we're not selling that.
Well, yeah. to be fair, it's in all disciplines because I get postcards and that from estate planning lawyers offering to do my estate planning.
Yes.
And I know some of them.
And you're on the estate planning committee for the Bar Association.
I know all of them. And I just start laughing at it because I was like, really? You want me to come to a meeting? I want the one with the free dinner.
Yeah, there you go. And they have nice dinners, too.
Some of them, well, they've kind of stopped that right now.
Because of COVID.
COVID, yeah. Too bad. It's a lot of Zoom stuff, which I'm not interested in any more Zoom meetings.
Yeah, right.
Or I should say the video meetings. I shouldn't use a brand name.
Well, yeah. If Zoom is kind of like Kleenex nowadays, right?
It's
or Jacuzzi.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Things have gotten like that. But,
yeah.
You know, we're talking, I know before... I know we just have about a minute or two about things that I'm seeing right now recently. And a lot of it is with people coming in with trusts. And is there a real property, other house or other real property they own in the trust? And it's stunning to me that either they don't know or it's not in there. Or they're not sure if it's in there or not, that they've bought and sold and that kind of thing. So that's something that your listeners really need to be keen on. If you have a trust or have an estate plan, make sure that your trust is doing what you want it to do. And the lawyer should sit down with you at the beginning and say, what's your plan? What are your goals? And then write those down for you, or you write them down, give them to the lawyer, and make sure that they have met those objectives. Because if you've got a real property and you haven't put it in your trust and it's still in your name, you pass away, and even if you have a pour-over will that puts it in the trust after you die, then you've got to pay for a probate that you shouldn't have had to do.
Right. Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. News Radio 1000 KTOK. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. This is Becky Ivins. I'm leader of the Becky Ivins Real Estate Team, where we are doing some great business. If you want your house sold, call. We can do it. And I really pride myself in getting more money than the typical realtor is going to get you. I do statistics, and it turns out I get about 1.9% more than the typical realtor. So there you go. I like that. I like my numbers. And we're here with Ron Shalott. And Ron Shalott's my attorney, and I kind of depend on him for my corporate attorney, too. And Ron, we were talking about taking title in a property, like if it's in a trust.
Right.
It turns out that that matters to sellers. If they sell to someone that's taking title in a trust or an LLC, and people hold things in these different entities now, homeowners want to sell to an individual or a family on the most part. It doesn't give them a warm, fuzzy feeling to sell to an entity.
Well, sometimes the entities are investment entities, but sometimes the entities are just vehicles that people are using to hold property for either a tax reason or a later passing on reason for an estate matter. Your LLC can be named any name that the state of Oklahoma doesn't have already registered, so you can come up with any name you want. Then your trusts can be any name as well. You can create a trust name that doesn't even have your own name in it, or it can have your name in the trust, which many of them do. They'll say like the Ronald Shalott Revocable Trust or some language like that. Yet you won't really know who is backing that, who is actually owning that. You might know who the trustee is, or you might know who the manager of the LLC is, but you don't really know who's getting it. And quite frankly, it should be of no concern in the sense of you want to sell it to an individual. Okay, you sell it to me, but if I'm just a straw buyer or if I plan on flipping it, you wouldn't know that anyway. So today you really don't know. So you're best to look at, are you getting a fair price for the sale? And Do they have cash?
Right. And are the other terms agreeable to you? Because there's other terms in a contract other than just price.
Oh, yes, there are.
I had a realtor this week counter offer an offer we sent, and by text, hey, I've talked to the seller. The seller's not willing to take that price. He'll take this price. And so, of course, I have to text back and say, how about the other terms in the contract? Is the price the only counter offer, and could I please get that in writing? Because if I get it in writing, I can go and say, hey, to the buyers, Mr. and Miss Buyer, they've agreed to every one of your terms in this contract.
And if you look at those contracts, those are four or five pages?
Six.
Six pages, okay. Several paragraphs.
Well, and then they've got attachments to them, like an HOA attachment, sure. Financing attachment.
A lot of things in there about what goes with the property, what's excluded. Mm-hmm. You sometimes have specific exclusion.
How much time's allotted for inspections? How long do you have to take it off the market?
Some realtors, I don't think, always put the exclusions in there. But anyway, you know, you've got to be careful because what you're putting in that contract as an offer, is that's what you're married to, so to speak, and that's what you're committing to if the person says yes.
Right.
But if they come back with a counter, then the counter may be for one term, such as price, or maybe for a number of things. May not even be for price, but it may be for time for inspection, time for closing, repairs, things like that. It could be something where they want all these things done, and you are saying, no, you're going to get it as is, where is.
Boy, there's a subject for us, as is, where is.
I walked into that one, didn't I?
Could we talk about that for a minute? Because on multiple offers, when you have, let's just say you've got eight offers sitting in front of you and you present these to the seller. When we have eight, we do a spreadsheet. And it basically is the blanks in the contract, are each have a category, and then we kind of compare. Start with the bottom line and go, okay, which one nets you the most money?
Sure.
And then we back up, and I kind of color code mine like, you know, yellow or kind of orangey for caution. This is a caution we need to look at. This is a stopper, like $500 earnest money. Realtors, yeah. If you're out there, none of us take you seriously when you put $500 for earnest money. It's like, would you take your house off the market for 3 weeks while we think about doing inspections and decide if we want to opt out? And then we get our earnest money back, our little measly $500.
Or if they forfeit the earnest money.
And they don't.
$500 is.
But they don't during our inspection period. Yeah. The buyer can back out if, in the sole opinion of the buyer, results of investigations, inspections, and reviews are unsatisfactory.
But even if they breach it and they give up the earnest money, you know,
it's only $500.
Yeah, it's only $500. It's not.
Do you know, one year I had 3 investors back out of a contract the day of closing. They sent somebody else to look at the contract, and then they fly in the day of closing and look at the house. And then 3 times in 1 year, the investor just walked away and lost the $500.
I wish those investors would have my phone number and pay me to go and do all this stuff.
Yeah, I know, right? Yes.
That'd be a great
But the as-is, where-is, that is put into a contract. As-is, where-is, with seller making no repairs, is put into a contract to make it look more attractive. However, if you don't mark out paragraph 7 saying that the buyer gets to inspect and can get their earnest money back and cancel the contract, as is where is means nothing.
You would have an inconsistent term. Now, you can get into a debate as to whether a handwritten term in a contract supersedes the printed term. That's something that you have to be careful on, because if you handwrite something or you specifically type something in, that is something with thought and negotiation, where if it's already pre-printed, it's in the small 3-point type in the middle of a 10-page contract, you know, is that really something that they care about? So it could override it, but do you want to take that chance? Because as is, where is just means what it says. You're not going to do any repairs. This is where it's at. This is the condition it's in with the time of the contract. That's what you're going to get.
Well, but they can back out during the inspection period, and there you have accepted their offer because they're willing to take it. With now, in one instance, we had no inspections. Buyer accepts property with no inspections, as is, where is, with seller making no repairs. That was pretty attractive, and it was cash and well above list price, so...
Let's talk about what happens if they don't want to do that or we get into a problem.
Okay, we'll discuss that right after this break with more on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000, KTOK. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. This is Becky Ivins, leader of the Becky Ivins Real Estate Team, and I am with Ron Shalott, my attorney at law. It's time for our word of the day, brought to you by Robbins Roofing, where their word every day is trust. You can trust Robbins Roofing to do a small repair or a whole commercial roof. They handle the insurance claim with expertise. You really don't have to get too involved with that. So call Robbins Roofing, 728-3700, or just go to BeckyIvins.com, click on Becky's Favorites page, and a link to their website is going to be right there. So our word of the day today.
The word of the day comes from the fact that I get this question a lot from people, and some people get this really wrong, quitclaim deed.
Oh, okay.
Remember that quitclaim deed?
Yes.
Some people will say, what's a quitclaim deed?
Right. A lot of people get that confused.
Get that confused, but actually it's quit, Q-U-I-T, quitclaim deed. So what does that mean? Because we're talking about as is, where is kind of a situation. But it's a deed that releases your interest or your claim in the property. The quit in quit claim deed comes to us from French, old French primarily, but the modern French, it's quitte, Q-U-I-T-T-E-E, which means discharged or freed. So we release or free up or discharge our ownership or our claim to the property. It's not only to just transfer title to the property, but if you have any kind of ownership interest in the property, you're giving up. For example, let's say a lady has a house that she's bought or she's inherited and she's lived in, and then she brings in a partner, and let's say they get married, but then a couple years later they get divorced, and the partner is never on the title, never did anything. It was always hers, always the original owner's. But that partner may have a claim to that title. So you would have them quit claim deed their claim or their ownership, whatever it is, to that property, to the original owner. It's just giving up what you own at that time if you own anything. I could quit claim deed to Becky Ivins, the Oklahoma State Capitol. That doesn't mean Becky Ivins owns the Oklahoma State Capitol. It just means that anything that Ron Chalot owned of the Oklahoma State Capitol, which, by the way, is nothing, would go to Becky Ivins. And that's all it really does. It transfers what you own at that time, not what you own later. And you're not guaranteeing or warrantying anything. That's a warranty deed where you guarantee or warranty title, you guarantee or warranty the legal description, you guarantee or warranty that you have an ownership interest. But in a quit claim deed, it's just whatever you own, this is in whatever is described, you're giving it to the other person.
Okay. Now, if you're quitting your interest, does that mean the husband and wife have to quit it to the wife? I mean, do both of them have to sign the quit claim deed?
Not in that particular situation, because if you're divorcing, you're then two different, or dissolving the marriage, I should say now. You are giving up your ownership interest in the property to the other spouse, so our former spouse, as the case may be. So you would quit claim deed your interest to the other.
Okay.
And they would get all of your interest at that particular time.
Well, if you want to be a part of our conversation, please do give us a call at 840-1000, 405-840-1000. Just dial it, and Mr. Mike Gannon's going to put you in to ask us a question. You know, we're talking about as-is property. Almost every time I list a property, the seller tells me, well, I want to sell it as-is.
And really, that's a quit claim deed, isn't it? Because you're just giving whatever you had right then and there. You're transferring it away, whether you're selling it for cash or giving it. I say giving, but you can sell for cash in a quit claim deed. It's just the buyer has to beware. Remember the old days of caveat emptor?
Yes, right.
Which
let the buyer beware.
Let the buyer beware. That used to be the way real estate was in purchasing.
Before our disclosure laws.
Before our disclosure laws. Really back when I was first starting to practice, which shows you how long ago that was.
Yeah, right.
But,
okay. Someone wants to be a part of our conversation, Ron. Good morning, Ann.
Good morning.
How are you doing today?
I'm well. Thank you.
Well,
I have a question for Ron about trust. When you're wanting to sell or buy a piece of property and you can't find the original trust, is that a big problem? You have a copy of it, but
Is your copy a signed copy?
With a copied signature, right?
I think so.
Well, as long as you have a copy of the text of the trust, and if it shows that it was signed, then that could work, and usually we rely on that. And if it's your trust, you could always re-sign another copy as the original, or you could amend it. But usually what companies or that would look at would be a memorandum of trust. And a memorandum of trust is a document sometimes one page, sometimes I've seen them up to six pages, which summarize the trust as a memorandum. That's what a memorandum is a summary. And it says what the name of the trust is and who the trustee is, which is what's important, because mm-hmm. it tells the world who is authorized to sign on behalf of the trust. And mm-hmm. that memorandum is supposed to be filed in the county where the real property is located.
Well, and like if there's co-trustees, it tells you whether or not it takes one trustee can sign individually, has the power of the trust, whether either of them can sign individually or if it takes both.
And, or more than two. Even.
Or you more, than right.
You can have multiple trustees.
And I ask for that memorandum of trust when a property's in the name of a trust. I have to see that before I can list a property because...
Your lawyer told you so.
My lawyer told me so, yes. And the thing is, I don't know who has the right to list that property if I don't see that memorandum of trust. Now, recently, exactly. we had someone who had a trust. This memorandum was like 9 pages long. Longest memorandum I've seen. And couldn't find it. Come to find out, it was filed along with the deed at the courthouse on subsequent pages of the same filing. And typically they file those separately and they're easy to find if they've been filed. And I will tell you, my opinion is few of them get filed because they get stuck in an attorney's portfolio of your business or something. But anyway, you need to be sure that if you have a trust, that memorandum is filed of record. That way we know at the last minute we found that and were able to transfer title to that property.
So, well, this is a kind of a weird deal. This was their father's trust, and it was left to the trustees were the two daughters. The one daughter who was in charge of it died, and now it's to the second daughter to take care of it. And so we don't know any of the particulars, you know, from the father who had the trust, who drew the trust up. So it's kind of convoluted in a way.
So you don't even know what's owned in the trust, do you?
Well, it's like I say, I've got a copy of the trust, but it's not, I don't think it's an original anymore. I can't tell copies from originals. It doesn't look like an original to me, but.
Well, Ann, what you could do is you can look at the deed and see if the deed of the property deeded it into the trust. And from there, look for the memorandum of trust also filed in the same county. Hopefully it was filed before or after the deed, somewhere in there. It should be close in time. And if it's Oklahoma County, the Oklahoma County clerk does a wonderful job. Hooten does a wonderful job of tracking down the recorder of deeds. Look for the memorandum of trust. That'll tell you who the trustee is, and almost always, I don't want to say always, they should have who the successor trustees are or is. And the successor trustee would be the one after other people have passed away. The successor trustee steps in. And the successor trustee oftentimes is not the same name as the trust. So that's why the memorandum is important, is to find out who's got that authority, because you want to make sure. And then that person would have the authority. Then what happens within the trust to the results of the sale depends upon the terms of the trust itself. And that's where you would look at the trust documents and see, perhaps even contact the attorney who drafted it up and see, hey, was this the version that was signed? Have there been any amendments? Has it been changed? So you look at all those kind of things to investigate into it.
So it would be good to get back with the attorney that drew up that trust, probably.
I would to make sure that there hasn't been any changes to it, because sometimes we'll amend a trust. Or sometimes we'll do a complete overhaul called a restatement, where you will completely change the trust, because it depends upon what the plan was originally and what the thought is now. I've done trusts that have been completely overhauled, done a restatement, or where the trust has been lost and we can't find it, I'll do a restatement to just put some terms into the trust with the memorandum allowing that.
I had an attorney do that not too long ago when nobody could find the trust, and the parents had passed away, and the daughter was trying to sell the house, but it was in the name of a trust, and nothing was filed of record. And I called the attorney, who was like 90 years old, and he said, I don't have a copy of that trust. He said, but I remember that family, and I can do a restatement of trust for them. And so that worked right on that.
Sometimes we keep copies and sometimes we don't. I often do not, because that could put me legally responsible if something happened where they needed a copy of it and I may have a duty to present it. And you don't want to get into those kind of situations.
Right. And then I'll tell you what. And great questions. Thank you so much. And is there a thing called a POD deed? Do you think a caller called a while ago and wanted to know about a POD? I think she's talking about maybe a TOD, transfer on death deed.
POD is pay on death. Pay on death is usually on a bank account.
A bank account?
Yeah, you'd pay on death or some kind of savings account. Now, there can be a T, like in Tom, Todd, TOD, transfer on death deed.
Let's talk about that when we come back,
sure.
Okay? So we're going to talk about POD and TOD when we come back with more on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000 KTOK. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. I miss Mark Carr today. He's used to doing these intros and exits for me. This is Becky Ivins. And I am leader of the Becky Ivins Real Estate Team, been a broker for over 40 years, and would love to put my expertise to work for you. So if you need help in real estate, contact me. We're pretty easy to find. Just type Becky Ivins in the Google bar, and you're going to find me. And you can contact me through my website, or you can just call my office, 722-3232. And yes, I know we have to use the 405 now. So it's 405-722-3232. So, Ron, we're talking about transfer on death deed. First of all, let's just say what it is.
Transfer on death deed, technically the Non-Testamentary Transfer of Property Act.
Non-testamentary means it's before you die?
No, it just means you don't use a testamentary vehicle like a will.
Okay.
Okay. You don't go through that kind of a process. It's a conditional transfer. A conditional transfer in the sense of it's conditioned on a couple of things. Number one, it's conditioned on you owning the property when you die. If you have sold the property or given it away or done something else, then your transfer on death deed has been invalidated or superseded. So you have to own it at the time that you die. That's number one. The second condition is that the person who is to receive it, the beneficiary, accept the reception, accept ACC, the transfer, and you do that by filing an affidavit in the county clerk of the county where the property is located, attaching a copy of the death certificate, certified copy of the death certificate, showing that the person has died and showing who you are and accepting the reception of the transfer. Then the property will transfer into the name of the beneficiary. Or it could be beneficiaries.
How long do you have to file that affidavit?
You have 9 months from date of death.
What if you didn't find out about it until a week before that 9 months is over, that you were the beneficiary?
A week before the 9 months?
Mm-hmm.
You better get to the courthouse and do it, or contact your smart, enterprising attorney, such as myself, and we'll get it done for you. You're going to sign the deed, but it needs to be done within that 9-month period.
An affidavit has to be notarized?
affidavit has to be notarized. That's what an affidavit is. It's an affirmation sworn under oath. And usually the affidavit will set out the particulars as to when the transfer and death deed was filed, the obviously the legal description of the property, just as if you're transferring it with a deed. And you're saying that I'm the beneficiary, here's the what the deed had said, and it's a conditional deed. It's conditioned upon it being in existence in the ownership of the person who has passed away. Hmm. At that point, it then and runs around an estate. Because usually when a person dies, if they die owning property, it goes into their estate. However, if there's a conditional transfer that supersedes it, then it will evade the estate and not go through probate. Same way life insurance doesn't go through probate if you have a beneficiary or if you have a tax-deferred account or other savings account where you have a beneficiary clause or pay-on-death, POD, clause. That automatically pays on death, but that's an automatic. This is a conditional transfer that has to be accepted. You actually have to do something. If you don't, you're deemed to have disclaimed it, that you don't want it, that you're disclaiming all rights to it, and then it goes, reverts back into the estate of the decedent, of the deceased.
So, if, I mean, it would be...
If you want it, you better file it.
And it's wise for someone to tell you that they are doing a transfer on death deed to you.
Usually you're aware of it. I'm sure there are situations where you're not aware of it, but you check it out. Have an attorney check the property, check the title, because that's transfer and death deed is filed on the property records. So it's a matter of public record.
Some of you tuned in to hear Gary Thornton with Crown Foundation. We're going to reschedule him, and we appreciate that you listened today, and I hope you learned something. This is Becky Ivins signing off today, but we'll see you next week.